Tonight, Antonio Inoki has died at age 79. We look back at the trailblazing contributions made by the Japanese legend. AEW Dynamite turns 3 this week. Daniel Cormier is headed to WWE in stripes. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat is returning to the ring at age 69. And what's it like to be manhandled by WWE's Nigerian giant? We find out from Mo Jabari, who was just in the ring against Omos on Monday Night Raw. It's a look back at the week in wrestling. This is Sunday night's main event.
We love professional wrestling.
Acknowledge me.
This is Sunday night's main event.
The cream of the crop.
Nobody does it better.
On the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Because you love something fresh and new, don't you?
We deserve better, people.
The best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
My God, what an impact.
Hey, how are you? Welcome to Canada's wrestling radio show, Sunday night's main event, powered by Great Lakes Beer, a fiercely independent brewery. Order online at greatlakesbeer.com. As always, the show is free to you on TSN Radio, the iHeartRadio and News Talk networks, through all our affiliates across the country, and online at snmeradio.com. If you'd like this show early, including extended episodes, full-length interviews, daily podcasts, and a lot more, sign up for our Patreon. About $1 a week is what it costs you. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. It's time to get down to some of the biggest stories that everybody's been talking about this past week. Here, we call it the five count.
You want to hear the breaking news?
The professional wrestling world is mourning the loss of the legendary Antonio Inoki, the founder of New Japan Pro Wrestling and still the promoter to present the largest attended pro wrestling event in history, passed away this past Friday. Inoki was influential as a wrestler and a public figure in Japan, even holding political office. We'll talk more about the life and contributions of Antonio Inoki later on in the show with Dave Meltzer. UFC legend Daniel Cormier is headed to WWE as a referee. It's been announced that the Seth Rollins-Matt Riddle Fight Pit match just got a little more interesting, as Daniel Cormier will be at Extreme Rules to serve as guest referee for the Fight Pit match. There's been a lot of talk in the past about Cormier making his way to WWE. Of course, one of the best matches to never happen in the UFC was Daniel Cormier and Brock Lesnar. Could that be what this appearance leads to? Is Andrade looking for a way out of AEW? Andrade El Idolo's career is set to be on the line in a mask versus career match against the Dark Order's 10 on Rampage next week? Okay. Andrade recently tweeted about not being able to wrestle, even though several talents weren't able to travel to Dynamite this past week due to the hurricanes. He's also been retweeting a lot of messages supporting him despite AEW's lack of inclusion. Andrade El Idolo has been using the hashtag FreeElIdolo on his social media as of late. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's return match is set for November 27th. This will be the first time that the Dragon has been in action in 12 years. A while back, it was announced that Ricky wanted to do one more match. There were even rumors back in the Ric Flair's last match days that Steamboat's health was a factor, but we did know he was asked to be a part of the match and turned down the invite. Since then, though, Steamboat has made several appearances for different wrestling companies, including MLW, the NWA, and AEW. Steamboat's match will be a six-man tag featuring him teaming up with FTR, taking on Arn Anderson's Four Horsemen. The team includes Jay Lethal as Black Machismo, Brock Anderson, and a mystery partner to be revealed. And minus possibly one or two matches, the card for WWE's Extreme Rules seems to be set. Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey are headlining with the WWE Women's Championship, or is it Bianca Belair versus Bayley headlining for the WWE Raw Women's Championship? There's also, of course, the strap match between Drew McIntyre and Karrion Kross. The I Quit match that was announced on Raw this past Monday between Edge and Finn Balor. You've also got the Fight Pit match, Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle, and the six-man tag team, good old-fashioned Donnybrook match. It's the Brawling Brutes taking on Imperium. Coming up, we're going to try and separate some fact from fiction when it comes to the rumors this past week, and also shed a little more light on just how big of a deal Antonio Inoki remains to pro wrestling, even after his passing. Wrestling Observer's Dave Meltzer is next, right here on Sunday Night's Main Event.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
Here in Canada, we have several regionally specific phrases that arise when said vernacular is considered appropriate, i.e., the funny-sounding term, shinny. Shinny is a game of ice hockey played without the standard head-to-toe body armor. Instead, only skates, gloves, a hockey stick, and preferably a helmet is worn. And, if you're Mike Lackey, GLB's brewmaster, you wear the same pair of shinny pants day in and day out from December until March. A common code of ethics is employed during a game of shinny. For example, raising the puck off the ice is strongly discouraged, for fear of being struck in the shins or worse, elsewhere. However, the most common practice takes place off the sheet of ice. Mandatory post-shinny beverages with your team, and boy does Great Lakes Brewery have the beer for that. Shinny Pants Session Stout, a beer inspired by Mr. Lackey's well-worn and well-stained pants.
Aw, man, you spilled beer on my shinny pants, bud.
Shinny Pants Session Stout. Drink it fresh, please.
It's time!
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider
with Dave Meltzer
on Sunday night's main event.
Dave, the first thing we have to talk about today, the passing of Antonio Inoki. This is a name that I think wrestling fans have known, even the most casual wrestling fan. You must have heard the name Antonio Inoki at least once in your life here, because the guy made so many contributions to what we know as wrestling and other martial arts today.
I would say, with the exception of Vince McMahon, that Antonio Inoki is the most influential person, of the modern wrestling era. And, was, like I would say, the second most influential person that was still living at the time until his death. Again, not just pro wrestling, from a Japanese standpoint, I think that the original popularity that came later of MMA was largely due to his matches with not just Ali, but Chuck Wepner and Willie Williams and Willem Ruska and others like that in the 70s, which were just gigantic on national television in Japan. I mean, it was like, it's a weird comparison, but from a television standpoint, though, when Inoki would do his matches against the supposed top stars from judo, karate, boxing, it was gigantic on Japanese television. It was kind of like the Billie Jean King, Bobby Riggs thing in the United States. I don't know if you're familiar with that. The Battle of the Sexes, something where everybody watched and it was one of those freak things and things like that. Inoki was already a legendary wrestler, but it made Inoki that much larger. And then in the era of Pride Fighting Championships, Inoki's endorsement of Pride Fighting Championships and his working with them was a big factor in Pride Fighting Championships being so big in Japan for the brief period that it was. And then when they had their business dispute, that led to a great decline in MMA interest. And I mean, Ali Inoki was the first closed circuit, really big national closed circuit attempted by pro wrestling promoters in 76. And he had so many famous matches. He founded New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is the number one company in Japan. Him and Ricky Dozan and Giant Baba are the three giants of the Japanese wrestling industry. And it's hard to me to explain people in North America how big he was, because we've never had anyone as big as those three, including Hogan, who comes the closest. But the difference was, a lot more people watched Inoki's matches on television than ever watched Hogan's matches. So Hogan did draw more people. And the other difference was that during Inoki's heyday and long after his heyday, they would do like polls of the 10 greatest sports stars in Japan. And Inoki was usually, number 7, 5, 7, 8, 9. He was not number one, but Inoki, Baba, and Ricky Dozan would be right after. I mean, so if you do that in, say, North America, the greatest sports heroes ever, you have your Babe Ruths and you're going to have your Michael Jordans and your Ali's. So he would be one of those type of guys. That was how big he was.
The thing with Inoki as well is that he was in that era, especially where, I mean, Japan still has a very serious, very traditional approach to pro wrestling. But he was also a guy who wasn't afraid to shake things up a bit and do things differently for attention.
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes good, sometimes bad. I mean, the stuff with martial artists was very, very big because they did it sporadically. Later, when Inoki wanted to build the whole company around that concept, New Japan, I mean, it was devastating to the company. It was terrible. But, as far as like his involvement in Pride and everything like that, I mean, it's so interesting because like Inoki is seen as this great martial arts fighter, but aside from the Ali match and a match in India or Pakistan, I believe it was Pakistan, he never actually had like a real match. And he was not like a top tier, you know, what I would call like an Anderson Silva or a George St. Pierre, or, you know what I mean? He was never that. But in Japan, he was revered as that because of the worked matches that he did against the stars from other sports. So he's seen as this great martial arts fighter, but he was actually a pro wrestler who was incredibly well marketed and had, you know, Inoki's one of the most charismatic people I've ever been around in my life. You know, I mean, right there with Hogan and, you know, people in that level, just people just gravitated towards him. The pops when he would come out were unbelievable, mm-hmm. especially when you consider how Japan's a lot more, they're not into the pops like the United States, but Inoki was God. I mean, he really was. He was a national hero and a sports hero and pro wrestling legend and a promoter and all of those things all wrapped into one.
We were kind of playing a game on the SNME Radio Facebook page. If you could compare Inoki to anybody, would it be Hogan? Would it be so-and-so? And I actually came up with kind of like a Vince McMahon, Hulk Hogan, and a bit of a Jim Crockett hybrid as well. And not so much for the business sense, but definitely for the ideas, trying to make things work and maybe not going the way they planned.
Not always. I mean, Inoki had some ideas, but I mean, his concept was the pro wrestling doesn't have to be real, but the pro wrestlers should be real. But I mean, like one of the things, and I mean, and this hurt New Japan a lot and hurt Yuji Nagata's career. I mean, Yuji Nagata was a very good amateur wrestler who was probably the guy who should have carried New Japan at this point. He was the most charismatic and the best worker that they had at that point. And so Inoki's idea to make him that larger than life star who could draw was to put him in a match with Mirko Krokop with the idea that he's a wrestler. He'll be able to beat this kickboxer. And obviously that didn't happen for a lot of reasons. I mean, you know, Nagata was past his prime as an amateur wrestler. He had an amateur wrestler in years and years and years. And Krokop was a beast at the level that people didn't really comprehend at the time, but later did. And then he put him against Fedor, you know, and the same thing happened. That would have been a great concept to get Nagata over. But it absolutely backfired.
It's almost like a Japanese brawl for all, right? Like it just seemed like a good idea at the time. But
except the difference was that instead of brawl for all being, you know, Steve Williams and Bart Gunn and Bradshaw, it was like you put your Steve Austin in there and he got knocked out in 37 seconds. Yeah, you know what I mean? Exactly. And it's just like, oh, well, you know, you put Austin and The Rock in the brawl for all. They both get knocked out. And it's like, OK, look at the damage you've done.
I mean, now you got nobody. Yeah. And that's where Nagata was supposed to be the guy. And right. like you said, got set back considerably because of that. OK, the match that everybody in North America knows the best, obviously, is Ali versus Inoki. Now, there's been different stories about this match. Of course, the crab walk where he's on his back for basically the entire match is Inoki kicking the hell out of Ali's legs, which you do see if you get to watch the match start to finish. You know, there's close up shots of his legs and just how
they're
much
badly bruised
damage was being done. But how much of this thing was a work? How much of this thing was legit? And also
the fight was completely legit.
OK, you know,
it was not supposed to be.
That was what my next question was going to be, because at the time, wasn't this supposed to be kind of a worked out thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was just like all the other ones. So what happened was they were paying Ali $6 million, although he only ended up making $1.8 million, which was more than he'd ever made for Foreman or Frazier. So the idea was that, you know, Inoki would beat him with an enziguri and make Inoki into this worldwide superhero. Well, Ali gets there and he's going along with it fine. And then all of a sudden, in the last couple of days, it's just like he thought maybe he was letting boxing down. Maybe he just shouldn't do it. So he basically refused to lose. So they tried to work out a finish with him and he wasn't going for it. Right. And they, instead of the match falling apart, they agreed to go in there in a shoot. But the rules were so favored in Ali's favor that Inoki had very few weapons he could do. So it led to what we had. And unfortunately, you know, even under those things, if you watch the fight now, and I have watched it a couple of times, years later, I thought Inoki won 12 of the 15 rounds because he did the damage to the legs. You know, Ali threw six punches in 15 rounds. But at the time, people didn't know what leg kicks were. So they didn't understand what he was doing. And so it was ruled a draw. I mean, and it was ruled a win for Inoki. People would have cried hometown favoritism because he was lying on his back the whole time. And the fans wouldn't have understood it either. It was a disaster of a match. So heavily billed. And in Japan, it's funny because at the time it was also considered a disaster of the match. But like 10 years later, you know, it was considered this legendary match because of the whole concept of Ali and Inoki actually fought each other. And people forgot how bad it was. And they just remember that it actually happened because Inoki got so big and Ali is Ali. So, and in Japan, you know, again, it became the forerunner. And now people go, the first great mixed martial arts match is Ali Inoki. But God, the rules were just ridiculous of that match. Inoki couldn't do anything because Ali's side was just so afraid. And Inoki felt he had to do it. I remember Inoki did an interview with one of my friends. He considered it one of his greatest things doing that match because even though the match wasn't good, it was real.
Yeah.
And it was scary because he knew if, you know, he got clocked by Ali, he was in more danger in potentially going into that match with those rules. And so in hindsight, when he would look back, it was really a highlight of his life being in the ring with Ali and surviving the danger for 15 rounds, even though he didn't get the win in the fight.
Do you think the draw was predetermined on both sides then? Do you think that's
No. They had judges.
Really?
And, you know, yeah, Gene LaBelle was the deciding judge and he ruled it a draw. The martial arts judge, I believe, ruled it for Ali and the boxing judge ruled it for Inoki. And then Gene, who was the referee, just said, I'm going to do it based on who did the most damage. And I mean, they did round by round scoring. And
right.
Gene had it a draw, which is ridiculous because Inoki did so much more damage than Ali did. But again, the damage of lying on your back and kicking would not have resonated like it would today because people didn't know what that was.
Still seems a little fishy to me to this day. But nevertheless, Antonio Inoki, one of the most influential figures in wrestling of all time, still holds the record for the largest wrestling event in front of that giant crowd in North Korea.
Yeah, the Pyongyang. And I think he's got some Pokemon record, too, or something, too. Or Pac-Man. He had a Pac-Man record at one time, believe it or not.
Okay, I'm going to have to look that one up. All right,
yeah,
fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, let's shift gears now to present day. Let's talk first about the return of Ricky Steamboat to action. He is going to be teaming up with FTR against what's being called Arn Anderson's Four Horsemen. You got Brock Anderson in there, Jay Lethal's Black Machismo, and a mystery opponent. Big Time Wrestling is putting this show on. They, of course, have been putting on shows with the stars for years, but there was a time where people were talking about Ricky Steamboat and his health not being that great. Is he going to be ready, you think, for this?
I hope so. I mean, the health thing was so many years ago. I mean, he had a couple year period there. I mean, I would bump into him from time to time and he would go through and it was nightmarish, you know, from the aneurysm that he got.
Yeah.
And between that and not having wrestled a match since, what is it, like 2010, 2009, probably, right? Because it was he did the Jericho match and he did a bunch of more matches that year and was great. You know, I mean, it was surprising how good he was, but he's 69. And like, you know, he turned down the Flair match because for reasons where he said he didn't want to embarrass himself at this age wrestling. So it absolutely stunned me when they announced that he was going to do a match. And six man, he can be protected and FDR. They're great. And we'll tag him in when needed. And he will, as long as he does a few arm drags and a few chops, I think everyone will be happy. But still, I hope he comes out unscathed and I hope he makes money doing this. That's all I'll say.
This is kind of turning into the Ric Flair's last match feeling all
well,
over
again. I hope
it's
again, not. I hope it's not, you know, but it won't be as big, you know, because Ric Flair's last match was a really big deal. And Ricky Steamboat, hopefully it doesn't wind up like that because the Ric Flair last match, you know, was very sad and very scary. And I mean, the other part of it, too, is I think that Ric Flair's probably going to wrestle again now, too. You know, I think that like now that he's far away from it, he looks back and I don't think that Ric Flair wants that to be his last match.
I was going to ask you about that, too. Do you think this might be a revisit to Flair Steamboat one more time? But
I mean, Flair wanted Steamboat in that match. You know, it's his favorite opponent of all time. So if Flair wrestles again and Steamboat comes out of this OK, I would believe that they would do a 6-man tag with them on opposite sides. I mean, I don't know it, but makes sense. It makes sense to me.
Well, and then again, this is all speculation. Please do not report as fact.
Oh, of course not.
Well, that's, but you know how it is, right?
So I do know how it is.
Get that out there. Okay, this was announced yesterday. Daniel Cormier going to be a part of the Fight Pit match between Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle. Could this be a precursor to Cormier and Brock Lesnar finally meeting up, but maybe in a WWE ring?
I wonder. I think that's up to DC. I think that they would love to do that in Saudi, where the Saudi Arabian, you know, officials there would love to have that kind of a match.
Well, that's what makes sense to me, right? I mean, that's where the money is. That's where they do these freak matches.
Or even at Mania, if they could pull it off. DC, you know, I don't know if you know this, but DC's original plan of his life was, you know, he'd go to the Olympics in 2004, hopefully win a medal, and then he would go into pro wrestling. And what ended up happening is that he took fourth. He did not get a medal. So he stayed till 2008. And then by 2008, then he went into MMA instead of pro wrestling. So he never did the pro wrestling end. But, you know, he's a big pro wrestling fan. And Seth Rollins is his favorite. Oh, I shouldn't say his favorite wrestler because
I remember that video though of him with Rollins when Seth won the championship. Yeah,
Seth was his favorite wrestler. I haven't talked to DC about wrestling in so many years that I couldn't say, you know, for sure, but he loves pro wrestling and he's a great guy. And I know that there's been interest in him as an announcer, but you know, McAfee got that gig. Fox loves him. I could see him ending up as an announcer with WWE. I actually sort of expected that what might happen at some point. You know, it didn't. And now he's doing great as a UFC announcer.
Okay. So, but you're not seeing a Brock match, you think?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think that if DC wants to get into shape for it, it's a hard
because
one.
That was always the question, right? Like, what if that match had happened in UFC? Obviously, it's not going to happen now, but to get them together,
DC would have killed him in UFC.
But, well, yeah,
but as far as in WWE, it's like I said, if DC wants to do a match with Brock, I'm sure Brock would love to do a match with DC, and especially because Brock's going to win the pro wrestling match. So maybe this is the precursor to that. I don't know.
We're talking to the Wrestling Observer's Dave Meltzer. WrestlingObserver.com is where you can find all the information that he puts out every week, including the newsletter. A couple more things here before we go, Dave. Andrade El Idolo has been using the hashtag Free El Idolo, which was something that dates back to other wrestlers. I remember when Rey Mysterio was under contract and they were trying to get him out so he could do some world tours and stuff. Other people have used the Free Me or whoever hashtag. So now he finds himself in a career versus mask match against 10 from the Dark Order on Rampage next Friday. Is this way out?
No, this is just, I'm sure, I suspect this is just storyline. I was told that Tony's giving no releases. And you know, you've noticed, like, even like with on Rampage, where they talk about contract tampering and things like that with Matt Hardy and Private Party, that they're just trying to do storylines based on, you know, reality. And okay. I think this is another one where it's just like, oh, people will look on the internet and think that Andrade's trying to leave. Maybe this is going to be the way he gets his release, is do the job for 10. But I presume it's that 10's losing the mask. I mean, that's what I think is happening anyway. I guess we'll find out on Wednesday night.
Well, yeah, that mask has been kind of a crux on that guy since he got in.
Well, actually, I should take that back. It's Friday night and Rampage is going live this week. So, yeah, so it'd be Friday night.
It's still just, it seems to me like a weird spot. I mean, I get trying to boost the ratings of Rampage, but the show is not there. So a career versus mask match that essentially comes out of nowhere. Exactly. Yeah, this is exactly what I'm saying.
This is the stuff that should be done 6 months into the feud after this great feud and everything instead of in the first match. And that's the very reason why it won't mean anything, because it's the first match of it's the first match and there's no build or anything like that. You know, even if they were going to do it to build to the guy losing his mask, I mean, it should have been like more than a 1 week build and should be like 3 or 4 matches to get to this. So,
yeah, like a mask versus career. This should be the life ender for a feud. And,
oh, I know. It should be a major pay-per-view match. And yeah, it should have been like after 6 months of feuding. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see what happens on Rampage. Last thing here, Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey is in Winnipeg, and a lot of Canadians here especially were appreciative of her sporting the orange shirt for our National Day of Truth and Reconciliation here, which is a very big deal. And Liv Morgan comes to the ring with a bat. Is Liv turning heel here, you think?
That wasn't the original idea. You know, the original idea was that Ronda was going to be the heel, but you know, the thing with WWE is that, and sometimes people like, they want to categorize babyface, heel and everything, is that WWE is person versus person. And there are babyfaces and there are heels, but it's blurred. I mean, let's face it. Sami Zayn's a gigantic babyface right now. Roman Reigns is a gigantic babyface right now. But they're booked on the heel side and they do heel things. Mm-hmm. But it's like when they get cheered, the company's not going, oh God, our heels are getting cheered. What's wrong? It's just like the fans can do what they want to do. And like with Ronda, when they did the whole thing with Adam Pearce, the idea, you know, was for Ronda to be a heel against Liv because they figured Liv can't be a heel. Yeah. But if everybody cheered Ronda, that's fine. They don't care. As long as people care about Ronda and Liv, it doesn't matter who gets cheered or who gets booed. And Liv got booed a couple of weeks and then she stopped getting booed. So whatever the crowd does, they do. But I don't think that Liv, if it works out in a certain way, maybe she goes heel, you know.
I don't see people wanting to boo Ronda if she's being a badass, you know, like if she's actually being that anti-authority, not the same level, but that Steve Austin type character. I mean, who wants to boo that? You know,
that's fine though, but that's fine. They can both be cheered. As long as they're both over as personalities, it doesn't matter if people cheer or boo or who they do. I mean, at some point Will they be categorized and work the match babyface heel? Yeah. Extreme Rules, you know, Ronda can go out there and or Liv can go out there and work a heel style and probably get cheered because it's Extreme Rules and it's Philadelphia anyway. So, you know, you're asking Philadelphia to play along with babyface heel, and that crowd historically is going to do what they want to do anyway.
The Wrestling Observer's Dave Meltzer, WrestlingObserver.com. Dave, this past newsletter, what can people read about?
Big story about AEW and ticket sales, which actually a lot of people are talking about. But we talked about, you know, the build to Extreme Rules, the hurricane, significant effects on everything. Obviously, this week coming up, it will be a gigantic story on Inoki, along with everything else that's going on. You know, the business stuff with AEW and WWE, but Inoki obviously taking precedence over everything this week.
All right. Well, Dave, as always, great to talk to you. Thank you very much for the update, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay. Have a great week.
Coming up next, what's it like to be standing in the middle of a hometown crowd of thousands being broadcast around the world and ending up in a match against Omos on Monday Night Raw? We're going to talk about that, plus what the career outside of that appearance is like for Canadian wrestler Mo Jabari. He's up next right here on Sunday Night's Main Event.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
If you're a fan of Sunday Night's Main Event, check out WrestlingObserver.com, a daily podcast, multiple podcasts per day, with hosts Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, and a number of others. You get a full library of podcasts dating back to 2005, over 9,000 shows, hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter dating back to 1991, and so much more. Don't miss out. Check it out today. WrestlingObserver.com.
I'm Manny Arsenal, and I'm with Baller Gear.
Hi, I'm Chad Jeter, and I'm with Baller Gear.
I'm Ricky Collins Jr., and I'm with Baller Gear.
Baller Gear is the official home for the CG brand. 39 Sack, Root Demons, Shaq One, Manny Show, Front Happy Collections, and more. We're also the newest home for the official tees from SNME Radio. Check out the selection of tees today at ballergear.ca.
You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
If you were watching Monday Night Raw this past Monday from Edmonton, Alberta, you may have seen the Nigerian giant Omos take on a couple of local competitors, allegedly. I don't even remember the other guy's name, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't it. Joining us now on the show, though, you may know him as Greg Lester.
Greg Lester.
We'll get there, but Mo Jabari, Kid Chocolate, who is definitely a rising star on the Canadian independent wrestling front, also one of the minds and one of the people behind Dungeon Wrestling, which we've talked about before here on Sunday Night's Main Event. So Mo, how are you, buddy?
Pretty good, man. How are you, Mike?
Doing all right. Definitely a moment of pride when you see a buddy, when you see a pal get a chance on Monday Night Raw, but before we even go there, I want to go back to the days when you and I first met. You were like green as goose poop, as I like to say, in the business. And who would you say was the first person to actually teach you the basics?
I mean, I started coming around PWA when I was about like 17, 18-ish. You know, I'll help with chairs and et cetera, the whole thing. You know, whenever they needed a ref, I'd jump in. Whenever they needed a cameraman, I'd jump in. And then before the shows would start, when the ring was set, you know, guys like Chris Knight, guys like Raj Singh would be around and they would show me things, whether it was a hammer lock, whether it was a lockup, stuff like that, or whether it was just a simple bump. You know, I would pick up little by little, all the way to when I actually started going to Lance's. You know, Lance was the, you know, first official. You know, from day one to 3 months in, he taught me everything there was to learn.
But those guys, Lance Storm, for those that aren't aware.
Lance Storm, of course. Yeah, Storm Wrestling Academy. Those guys kind of got me going first, you know, showing me, hey, this is what this is, and this is what this is, before I went to Lance's. And by the time I did go to Lance's, I had had an idea of what he was talking about. So it helped me a lot more than most guys in my class that were just, you know, getting, you know, the basics for the first time.
Couple months ago, had Dallas and Bret Hart on the show after a visit to Calgary and Dungeon Wrestling, the first official show. As the years have progressed your career, your notoriety across the country. You've also been wrestling in the U.S. So where else have you wrestled, just to give people an idea of your span?
I actually think I only the Maritimes left for me, if, you know, in terms of across Canada. If I was to wrestle in Halifax or somewhere like that, at that point, I've cleared out of Canada. But U.S., I've gotten into the last couple months, and I've, you know, wrestled in Boston, New York area. I've had some interest from, like, guys in South Africa. They've been trying to bring me over there, but just never, you know, the right time never came. You know, COVID would come as soon as I was ready to go over there. And then, you know, things like that. But I'm going over there to South Africa now in, I believe, February. I'm doing a tour down there. And I've also been in contact with a guy in Qatar that runs big shows. His name's Ali over there. He runs big shows and has these, and he's been, you know, talking to me to bring me down there to do it. I was actually supposed to go down there, I believe, June-ish. Again, I didn't go through well because I think they were having issues with the big COVID numbers, so they couldn't do any events. So again, COVID has defeated me twice. But hopefully down the road, I'd go down there. But I'm looking to go to the UK and stuff. So this new year coming, I'm trying to go all over the place.
Okay, so let's talk about another relationship here. And this is something that, I'll be completely honest, man, as a friend, I can say I'm legitimately envious of you in a lot of ways. Because not only is Brett a friend, but yeah, Brett the Hitman Hart kind of took you under his wing, to the point you even got the gear nod. Can we talk about that for a second here?
Man, yeah,
how did you and Brett even get together here? And you know, it's always an interesting story when you meet Brett. So
for sure, Brett, obviously, as you know, Brett's just a sweetheart, man, the nicest guy. You know, I got introduced to Brett through family. You know, I just so happened to be friends with, you know, a lot of his family, whether it was, you know, Brooke and Pete, you know, which are the guys that I was originally friends with, TJ Wilson, obviously, Harry and all those guys. So I just so happened to be around Brett a lot, you know, through those guys, through the years. And I never really bugged him much. I never really told him I was a wrestler. I never really asked him about wrestling, never, just left him alone. And obviously his son, Blade, just so happens to be one of my best friends in the world. You know, he's a great friend of mine. I've been friend of mine for years. But yeah, I just never approached him that way. You know, I just sort of approached him as a relative to my friends, and as my best, one of my best friend's father. You know, just like I would go to my friends' houses and I would meet their parents. I treated him just like that. And through the years, you know, he found out that I was a wrestler. And he was kind of curious as to why I wouldn't, you know, approach him and, you know, ask him, you know, advice and et cetera, et cetera. You know, Brett, from there, you know, I would show him my matches and I would talk to him about wrestling. And he would obviously, you know, take the time to look at them and give me feedback. And then actually sometimes would sit down with me and go through what he thinks I should be doing, how I should be doing them, showing me what to do, and sort of became my trainer, pretty much retrained me again. Not that Lance didn't train me well. Lance did a tremendous job training me. But, you know, I think Brett kind of caught me at a perfect level where I needed to advance and get taught a higher level. And since then, you know, my game has stepped up, and obviously the pressure of coming back after every match, trying to show him, hey, look, I've gotten better, it's been on me. So I would always do my best to come back better than I was yesterday with him. You know what I mean? Anything he told me came back, hey, look, what you told me yesterday or last week, I actually did. I applied it. I got better. Here it is. And then he would go from there. And I think he actually appreciated the fact that I actually took the time and really was grinding. And then, especially during COVID, where I got a key to a gym, and I really lived in this gym pretty much, you know, whether it was in the ring and training. So he really appreciated my efforts and my dedication to it. So he's helped me a lot more since too.
We have to talk about it before we get into Dungeon Wrestling and your show coming up in Calgary, Wrestleween. We have to talk about Raw, man. We have to talk about it this past Monday. What was your tag team partner's name again? The name of the game, do you remember?
Oh, God, no.
No.
I don't, And it's we'll get into how they even came about that, but go, yeah.
Okay,
go
So I need to know, how did Mo Jabari become Greg Lester?
Obviously, doing those extra spots, it's just pretty much a long day of doing nothing. You know, you just go walk around, pretty much a long day of just shaking hands.
Yeah.
And then just saying hi and whatever. And they just come and got us and was like, hey guys, go get checked, go to the doctors, you know, they'll clear you for anything we need. A few hours before the show, when they came out of the production meetings, that they found out that they had some for, I think, maybe two of us or a couple of us. And the agents were walking around and they picked, well, just so happened to be me and the other dude. Then it was just like, hey guys, right about 8 o'clock, you know, see you by Gorilla. And we'll see you out there type of thingy. But literally we got into Gorilla and we're standing there and one of the production guys walks by and he goes, like, your name's for the night, what would it be type of thing. And I maybe misheard what he said. I thought he was asking for my name, like my actual wrestling name. And I looked at him like, dude, I thought you knew my name. He's like, Mojibari. Yeah. He's like, no. He's like, I think I just gave him Mojibari. I was like, yeah, Mojibari is good. And he goes, no, I know that. But he's like, that's not the case. He's like, you're going to be, and he looks at his phone and his notes and he's like, you're going to be Greg Lester. And I don't even know what the guy said. Once he said that, I kind of zoned out. And of course we went out and did the thing. And I come to find out later on too, they were calling me the maple syrup kid too. So it was like, it was all fun and games. So for me, and I kind of zoned out about that. I just was like, all right, I'm happy to be here. I have to get this opportunity and get seen. But the name, you know, something to laugh about and obviously tell us the story of. But
and let's say you work towards that deal and you get noticed. I mean, Greg Lester can be the guy that was squashed by Omos, but you know, Mojibari can be somebody completely different. So
exactly. Mojibari is just right behind him and just needed that door. Greg Lester just had to open that door for Mojibari pretty much.
He's the Ezekiel to your Elias or whatever you want to call it.
There you go.
Now you're in this match. You're basically going against Omos. Take us there for a second. For those of us that are fans that are never in a WWE ring and we're never standing next to an Omos, what does that feel like for you? You're in Alberta, your home province, like you're looking around, people you know are there, people that know you are there, and you're standing next to Omos. Describe that feeling.
Omos, man, oh my God. I don't think that guy, TV does not do him justice at how big he is. This guy's got like dinosaur bones, man. He's huge. But also just a nice guy too. Just a nice guy to talk to. Nice guy, you know, very accommodating, especially, you know, obviously in a business where he knows guys are taking bumps for him. It's very important to make sure, you know, the guys that are bumping for you are happy and like, you know, you take care of them. And he was very accommodating. And obviously a guy like MVP is there with him who's been in the business for years and who's making sure he lets him know, hey man, these are the guys who are bumping for you. Make sure you're taking care of them type of thing. But once we got in there, man, wow. The man was, can man handle anything walking? Like, it's nuts. He's picking me up. And obviously in a business where you got to be there with guys, I didn't have to be there with him at all. He's like, just lay down and he was just picking me up like a toothpick. And it was just kind of, I was kind of amazed. I felt like 1 month old baby. And he was just picking up, throwing around. And he took care of me for a guy like that. He could have murdered me if you wanted to.
Is Omos the biggest person you've ever been in the ring against now?
Absolutely.
Or in the ring with? Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. No one bigger. Crazy. I don't think I ever will be in a ring with someone bigger than that guy.
All right. Well, you know, never say never.
Never, for sure.
All right. So let's talk about what you're up to outside of WWE TV appearances, you know, those things, whatever.
Of course.
Dungeon Wrestling. You guys had your premiere show a couple months back. I got to be there. It was an amazing pleasure to be there. And now you're going back to the Victoria Pavilion, the place that Stampede Wrestling was born and raised in. And now you have the Hart family legitimately behind this promotion. This is, you know, you can't get more legit, I think, than this with Dungeon Wrestling coming to the Victoria Pavilion. You've already announced some big names that are coming too. So this is going to be a pretty hot show with some big talent. Yeah. Can you give us any more details of what's coming up?
Of course. I mean, like you said, man, it doesn't get any more legit than this. Of course, over the years, a guy like you definitely knows you've been around for quite some time. You know, there's a lot of, over the years, there's a lot of companies that come around and do things like these and claim, you know, the Hart family have something to do with it or whatever. But this is the first time that they actually do, whether it's Brett, Dow, you have the biggest Hart and, you know, involved pretty much, you know what I mean? So it's a legit company and it's a professional company. that take care of the boys and girls that work for us. Our main focus really is really good wrestling. Nothing else, just really good wrestling. They're not buying tickets for shenanigans and stuff like that. They're buying tickets to see the best wrestling there is. You know what I mean? I'm sure a lot of the people on Monday drove all the way to Edmonton to see WWE. So there's this hunger here that's left. So if we can get in there and fill it, it would be our pleasure, really. But we're on October 29th, Saturday, October 29th. We have the Pavilion. So far, we've got guys like Chris Masters announced. We got guys like Rohan Raju from NXT UK announced. We got Brian Pillman back. We got Harry Smith back. We got Nick Aldis and on this coming on. We got the Billington Bulldogs. We got the Bollywood Boys. So we're trying to, like I said, like the goal is really good wrestling. And then we can get the best of the best to work with our local guys to create some great experiences for families. That's really the goal. And I think we're doing a great job. Like you said, we had a show in July the 9th. And it was just that. Great wrestling, great family entertainment. Everyone left had hungry for more. And that's really our goal, just to keep doing these for us and to see how far we really get and to see if we can somewhat bring back what's too hard left here. You know what I mean? So if we can do him justice even a little, that would be our pleasure.
Well, and nothing against the great indie feds across Canada and around the world that rely more on local talent than bringing in names. But I think that this is a great combination of bringing in names to work with the local talent, like Stampede did. You'd have talents that would go down to WWF back in the day. They'd come back for visits. And so it gives a different level of exposure, I think. So I think it's a great idea. Mo Jabari, it's great to talk to you this way, my friend. Thanks for being a part of the show today. And again, if you want to be a part of WrestleWeeN 2, October the 29th, the Victoria Pavilion in Calgary, Alberta, just look up Dungeon Wrestling on social media. You'll find out all the ticket information and everything. But Mo, all the best, my man.
My man, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you. I hope to see you soon.
I'm Mike McGuire. This is Sunday night's main event. And again, if you'd like to find out more about Mo Jabari, just look him up online. And of course, you can watch Greg Lester, as he was known, on replays of this past week's Monday Night Raw. Okay, coming up next, we are a week and a half away from AEW making its Canadian debut. We have a special event planned for you if you are going to be in Toronto that day. That and more still to come on Sunday night's main event.
You're listening to Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
Here in Canada, we have several regionally specific phrases that arise when said vernacular is considered appropriate, i.e., the funny-sounding term, shinny. Shinny is a game of ice hockey played without the standard head-to-toe body armor. Instead, only skates, gloves, a hockey stick, and preferably a helmet is worn. And, if you're Mike Lackey, GLB's brewmaster, you wear the same pair of shinny pants day in and day out from December until March. A common code of ethics is employed during a game of shinny. For example, raising the puck off the ice is strongly discouraged for fear of being struck in the shins or worse, elsewhere. However, the most common practice takes place off the sheet of ice. Mandatory post-shinny beverages with your team, and boy does Great Lakes Brewery have the beer for that. Shinny Pants Session Stout, a beer inspired by Mr. Lackey's well-worn and well-stained pants.
Aw, man, you spilled beer on my shinny pants, bud.
Shinny Pants Session Stout. Drink it fresh, please.
This is Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Sunday night's main event. I'm Mike McGuire, broadcasting across Canada on TSN Radio and, of course, online at snmeradio.com. If you are not a Patreon member and don't subscribe to our daily podcast, that's fine. I do want to let you know you're missing out on a few things, but one thing that is open to everybody, whether you're on the Patreon or not, is our pre-AEW Dynamite party. This is going to be happening at a place called the Rhino Bar. The Rhino Bar in Toronto. You can find all the information on our Facebook and on our social media. Our friends who also have a show right here on the network at Dark Side of the Elite, they've been working hard with another podcast group, THT, some figure collectors, and a bunch more. There's going to be some great prizes. They're talking about some special appearances by some great local independent talent, which, of course, we love supporting here on SNME Radio, as well as, if you're a collector, a figure nerd like I am, if you're someone who just likes cool things, I've been assured that these prizes are going to be worth showing up for. So No admission, no charge, no pre-Patreon membership required. But again, if you can help us out for about $1 a week, we'd appreciate it. Patreon.com/SNME Radio. But it's going to be Bash at the Bar coming up the Wednesday of AEW Dynamite. It starts around 1 o'clock or so and goes till about 6. It's like a 5-minute drive away from the Coca-Cola Coliseum, which I've never been to before, so I'm looking forward to the building, looking forward to the show, and I'm looking forward to seeing you there as well. So, if you can join us again, Bash at the Bar coming up for AEW Dynamite. It'll be a great time. And speaking of AEW Dynamite, next week on the show, we're going to talk to a Canadian talent who's going to be at the show. One would hope. It's his home province. Yeah, all ego. Ethan Page is set to be right here on Sunday night's main event. We might talk toys, too. He's got kind of like a super successful toy vlog, and he's just a really cool guy. Plus, I'm pretty sure I ring-announced him in the Indies once. Anyway, until next week, as always, thank you for listening and letting me do what I do. Till next time, play safe, drive safe. Be seeing ya.
To get the complete show, as well as bonus weekly podcasts, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/SNME Radio.